Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 50. Number 50 of the audio briefings. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really happy to have you here. And I know I say that every single episode, and because it has been repeated, it may come off as not being genuine, but I truly do thank you for being here. And I am truly so happy to have you here, especially 50 episodes in. We started this thing back in February-ish, and here we are, 50 episodes later in October, and it's been a ride, and I've really enjoyed sharing with you guys. I've really enjoyed learning with you guys and hearing from you guys, and that's what today's episode is going to be about. I'm going to tell you a little bit of some stuff that's happened this week, and it's been, again, a busy week, lots of variety, and I also want to share some feedback or share with you some things we've heard from some listeners just this week alone, because I always say we love hearing from you, so I want to share that with you. One of those pieces of feedback was actually a question that gets into a little bit of technical IFR stuff. I'm going to save that one for last, and we'll talk about that topic, and it's about pop-up IFR clearances, and that came from Valerie, and we'll talk about that after I kind of fill you on what's all happened this week. So, looking at my list, and it's a bit of a list. So this week we started off doing a couple sessions of tailwheel training with Thomas in his mall. Did a couple sessions last weekend. We were up again yesterday and today. He's making awesome progress. Tailwheel training is a bit of a roller coaster ride, and everybody that I've worked on tailwheel with gets super frustrated. Like, I can't nail these landings. I can't nail these landings. And the funny thing about tailwheel training is it's not really about nailing the landings. It's about being able to recover from all the ones you didn't nail. And airplanes will take funny bounces, and each one is different, and the recovery is always different. And that really is the key when it comes to tailwheel flying. So Tom's doing really well, really enjoying that flying. Another client we flew with this week was Richard in his Piper Malibu. And what a great airplane that is. We're doing some recurrent IFR proficiency flying. And we kind of expanded his envelope a little bit, going into uncontrolled airport outside of radar coverage and uncontrolled airspace. The procedures are different. You're much more on your own, responsible for your own altitudes and terrain, even though you are IFR. So we both had a really nice flight doing that. The weather was actually really good for an IFR flight. But yeah, the variety is just a lot of fun. I got in the mail my new T3 tailwheel suspension system for the Bearhawk. We installed that yesterday. Actually, Thomas and I did while we were waiting for the fog to lift to go tailwheel flying in his airplane. What else? A couple of ferry flights. So you guys have heard Cardinal Aviation coach and pilot Blake, who is also responsible for our new resume service, which you can check out at flightcrew.ca. And Blake did a ferry flight in, I call it Franken airplane, but it's an experimental Cessna 182. And this airplane's pretty neat. It is a Cessna 182 fuselage paired with Cessna 206 wings and tail section. And it has a Cessna 185 engine strapped on the front. And that airplane was coming out west here to Chilliwack, BC from Esterhazy, Saskatchewan, just outside of Regina there. He departed at sunrise from a farm strip out in Esterhazy and flew all day. It was about 10 hours in the air, across the prairies, stopped in Calgary for gas, through the Canadian Rockies, stopped in Vernon for a bite to eat and a little bit more gas, and then into Chilliwack. And got that done in one day, one really long day. And yeah, I want to congratulate Blake on a mission well done. We hooked up here the next day, and he asked if I could give him a ride out to Vancouver Airport so he could hop on a flight over to Victoria to go hang out there for a few days, and ended up popping him over there in my Bearhawk because I could get to Victoria and back faster than I could drive one way to the Vancouver Airport. So great to fly with Blake as well. And another ferry flight that we're working on, we're just finalizing, is in a open cockpit biplane that needs to go from Vancouver all the way down to Louisville near Indiana there. And we're just finalizing that. Jody's going to be taking care of that. Jody Ruger of Jody Ruger Air Shows. She's a biplane extraordinaire-ess. I don't know what you're trying to put a bit of a twist on that. But anyway, really looking forward to doing that one for Eric. And yeah, this afternoon, after flying with Thomas, I was at the airport and we went and checked one of our clients' airplanes and it was looking a little bit dirty, especially with the rain we've had, followed by smoke and then you know, misty mornings, you just get this residue of smoke and it just kind of makes the airplane look like crap. So after the tailwheel flight, came home, grabbed my kids, went back down to the airport, and my son, who is 4, and my daughter, who is 8, and I spent 2.5 hours washing one of our clients' airplanes. And you know, I guess while most kids are at the park playing, we're at the airport washing, but that's quality time with me. So really enjoyed that with the kids and grabbed some burgers on the way home. And all in all, I think that is the end of a good day. Lastly, the day before yesterday, and we've talked about Jason Miller from the Finer Points here before. He's got that awesome ground school app. He is a phenomenal instructor, somebody I really look up to. He runs something called the CFI Club, and it's really a group of instructors from across the United States and maybe a few from Canada that he's put together to help kind of critique and refine and improve his online or ground school app. And he held this meeting, and it was done by Zoom, and it was just so neat to be in a Zoom room with a bunch of other professionals that are so dedicated to flight training and to finding new innovative ways and being able to pull ideas from Jason's wealth of experience as everybody just kind of works together to find ways to get through to students with various challenges, be it landing challenges or IFR challenges, whatever it may be. I really, really enjoyed that session with Jason. So thanks, Jason, for giving so much of yourself and so much of your time to further flight instruction and just make pilots better. And I take a lot of inspiration from that in everything we do at Cardinal Aviation. And it's because we have great relationships with people like Jason who are motivated to do the same. All right. The other thing I want to mention is over the last 50 episodes, we have had some amazing guests. And we've also had some amazing supporters. And it makes me smile. And I'm really happy when I think back on how far we've come just since February. And I just want to thank all those people that have made this possible. All right. As we get into these letters from listeners, I just want to point out that they're, to me, more than letters. You know, feedback can be in the form of one line or two lines or an Instagram message or an email. It really doesn't matter. But what really means so much to me is that a lot of this feedback, it is clear that the person giving it has really taken time to absorb, taken time to compose thoughts, and really taken the time to put those thoughts down on paper and really tell us what they think, what their opinion is. My favorite ones are where I'm being corrected, and some people may get offended by that, but I take it as a learning opportunity, and I'm happy to pass that on to you. So the first one I want to share with you today came from Ryan Mitchell, who we talked about a couple episodes ago. He became an annual supporter on the podcast page. I'll just read it straight up. And it said, "Hey, Ryan, I was listening to a few of the podcasts last night on the deadhead back to Toronto. I found myself unconsciously tapping my foot as you were describing your flight over the railroad tracks in the smoke. I felt like I was right there with you. Since you asked for feedback and ideas, that episode triggered one that I thought I would share. I like that you put out different styles of episodes, shorter briefings and longer discussions. What I liked about your smoke episode was the context that you gave and the humility that you brought to it. Those are the stories that have these powerful takeaways that will stick with us for a long time. Someone listening to that episode might find themselves out there a few years down the road, following a road or some tracks in low viz, and it'll trigger your story and maybe shepherd them to some safety-minded decisions about their situation. In one of the other episodes, it might have been the resume episode with your friend, you referred to some friends you lost and how the event snapped you out of the moment that you were in and led you to securing the engine rather than letting it idle. My unsolicited suggestion, and this is where it really gets important, is maybe a sub-series of episodes that feature discussions with pilots who have been in abnormal emergency situations, or have found or put themselves in situations that they were fortunate to get out of. I think your tone of humility and of trying to put ourselves in someone else's shoes in that moment without judgment highlights the vulnerability that we all share when we operate in these environments. It might not be easy to find these guests initially, but I think that you and your podcast have established the credibility that would give the level of trust that their very stories would be handled with respect. Further, you may find that some may find it therapeutic in some form to be able to speak about it and then do something positive with what otherwise could have only been a negative situation. Anyway, just a unsolicited thought. Have a good rest of your Sunday. Thanks, Ryan. And I think that is an amazing idea, Ryan. And like you pointed out, I think the key is having people that want to share feel comfortable in sharing. And I think I've tried to make myself vulnerable. I've shared some of my not so proud moments about situations that it's not that they happened to me. It's that I put myself in a really bad spot. And step one is owning it. You know, I have a problem or I made a bad decision. And step two is sharing that bad decision or that experience with others in hopes that, like you said, it triggers that thought when they're maybe in a similar position or they see themselves going down that rabbit hole to maybe snap them out of it. Because we can work together to transform the way each other fly to enhance flight safety. So I want to take you up on that, Ryan. If there's anybody listening to this that wants to come on and do an episode with me that has put themselves in a position they maybe shouldn't have or wish they hadn't or in hindsight wasn't such a great idea, and you feel that that story might help others, send me an email, info@cardinalaviation.ca, and let's do an episode. If you feel more comfortable with it being anonymous, we can drop any names, we can make up a name, whatever you want, we can do it. But sharing these stories is so important to foster this environment of learning and flight safety because, you know, as it's been said a million times before, we won't all live long enough to make all these mistakes ourselves. We have to learn from one another. So again, thank you very much, Ryan, for that. The second letter, and it's from a listener. I actually talked to them on the phone yesterday, and they're not big social media people, and they prefer their privacy. So I'm not going to mention names. Let's just call them Charlie. Let's call this person Charlie. And this person has, or I should say Charlie, has sent several emails. And quite honestly, I think they've spent more time writing these emails than I spend recording an episode. And I'm not saying that to be cheeky. I just really appreciate the amount of time that is being spent in writing emails with clearly very well thought out feedback. And it's kind of gone episode by episode. And this one refers to an early episode that we did. It was episode number 7, and it was a short one. And I think I called it Landing Gear Sticky Fingers. And it was all about when I'm working with somebody coaching in a retractable airplane, I like to tell them that, you know, I would like their hands, or at least a finger, resting on the gear handle until the gear has completed its cycle, be it up or down, just so we're not setting the gear and forgetting about it and then not verifying 3 green. So Charlie had this to say, and it's a bit of a long email. Stick with me, because this person makes some really, 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 really good points. And I'm not going to say that Charlie is right or I'm wrong or I'm right or Charlie's wrong. I think it's really important that we take the input of multiple pilots, especially experienced pilots like Charlie, and we decide what is best for us. So here it goes. It says, podcast episode number 7 comments. I've thought about what you said, and I tried to remember what it was like for myself at the beginning. Unlike most of your clients, I presume, after my commercial license, I started working in a 2-crew operation. There, on 2 occasions, a more experienced captain unsuccessfully tried to kill me. These moments instilled in me the need to monitor and verify. Your clients may not have had these moments, thankfully. I don't view the holding of the controls as necessary to even start with, but I see what you're trying to instill in them, the need to be the supervisor of the operation rather than simply an operator or button pusher. At some point in their training, I'm sure they've had an instructor remind them to monitor the six-pack. Why not concentrate on solidifying and including gear and flaps in their continuous monitoring checks? I know it's not going to give instant results as the change in mentality from physical only, moving the levers and holding them, to physical cognitive, moving the levers, then returning to visually verify, is difficult, especially when the level of experience in a particular environment is low. However, with the addition of more automation elements, GPSs, iPads, etc., it's finally time to change the approach to learning the operation, because the actual operation has changed. You have access to information and best practices that have been tested on thousands of pilots. Line pilots tested out the SOPs in everyday operations. Even though your clients are single pilot operators, what we have learned in airline operations can and should be utilized by other GA pilots. Line operation safety audits have shown that pilots make many mistakes during a flight, but these mistakes are usually caught and corrected by utilizing a disciplined approach. Single pilot operators have to have their own disciplined approach and stick to it because they don't have a second person to help out. There's guidance from regulators and research by organizations that support the benefits of having and utilizing a single pilot CRM concept. When I was flying the Cessna Caravan single pilot IFR, I did have the benefit of having some type of company standard operating procedures laid out and the steps on takeoff, go around, approach, etc. But that is simply a formalized standard on how to operate the aircraft. And anyone can create such a document. It simply states the steps required when operating that particular aircraft in a particular phase of flight. However, I feel that the set but verify mentality was what allowed me to catch a WTF moment and solve it before I ended up a statistic. It was an IMC night and I conducted an approach to a runway. I didn't see anything and went around. I put the flaps up. It has a fixed gear. It was a fixed gear airplane, so there's no gear. I set the autopilot on climb and put my head down to flip through the approach plates to find the paper approach plate for the airport that I was diverting to, which was 5 minutes away. By searching, I took a moment to look up and verify that the plane was doing what I expected it to do, but it wasn't. The speed was bleeding off in the climb, and I felt like it felt like one of those unusual attitude exercises during commercial training 6 years prior, where the student closes their eyes and the instructor does something, and then the student opens their eyes and has to assess and appropriately recover. I don't know if I moved the trim wheel when reaching for the approach plates, or if I incorrectly set the autopilot, or if there was something else. My periodic verification helped me catch the situation in time to recover and continue. This experience led me to focus my school studies on researching about pilot monitoring. In a two-crew environment, the term pilot not flying was changed to pilot monitoring, and the pilot was told to monitor, but there's no actual guidance of what, where, and how to monitor, at least not much direction from my past employers. Recently, the airline that I fly for came up with additional targets to monitor when landing. This standard operating procedure was implemented this year and defines the activities of the pilot flying and pilot monitoring. The pilot flying is now monitoring visibly related criteria, and the pilot monitoring is monitoring stability criteria. The touchdown zone now has a numerical target, so that floating and it looks about right, which were subjective criteria, now actually have limits, and if exceeded, must be appropriately corrected. Apparently, according to the webinar presenter who worked on developing this, this is a first in the airline industry. And I think this is their solution to the same issues I noticed when I was writing my school research a few years earlier. In my analysis of two crew incidents, I noted that without specific monitoring targets, a pilot monitoring isn't actually monitoring, but becomes a pilot flying, though not actually touching the controls. In both incidents, the crews regained situational awareness, that is, verified their mental model with indications, and recovered, preventing an accident and illustrating, although we as pilots do make mistakes, the operation is quite resilient if we employ proper verifications. In single pilot operations, the lone pilot must perform both functions, that of flying the aircraft and of monitoring. There are innovative ideas out there, new inventions and devices that could be installed in a flight deck to help a pilot with monitoring duties. But those great inventions might be cost prohibitive and a distraction in itself for most GA pilots. And I don't think they're necessary. Changing habits and instilling physical cognitive approach to flying, I think, is simpler. But I also know that it will take effort. Pilots have to deal with more complexities in their fun flying, retractable gear, variable pitch propellers, IFR in actual IMC, busy airspace, iPads, and electronic technology in the aircraft. When things get increasingly complex, I think pilots would benefit better from a fundamental set then verify approach to their flying. That will enforce the need to monitor, which will equally be helpful during low and high workload situations when the pilot moves from a less complex to a more complex operation and vice versa. If you want to read more about my ideas on the importance of monitoring, I am attaching my research project. Thanks, Charlie. Anyway, that was a lengthy email, but the reason why I wanted to give it the time and really read it to you in its entirety is just to demonstrate the quality of some of this feedback that we get and how well thought out it is, and that the person giving the feedback clearly cares about flight safety, as do I, and I'm so appreciative of that. And thank you very much for your feedback. And I will definitely employ some of your ideas in my work with my coaching clients. The last email that we got this week, and this was just yesterday, was from one of our actual coaching clients. And I love how he basically said, well, you can call me to explain it, or if you want to do an episode about it, you could do that so that everybody else can learn. And that just mentality of sharing the learning is what this is all about. So as I'm pulling up this email here from Valerie, let's go ahead and read it. It's pretty short. It says, "Hi, Ryan. I wanted to consult with you about the following situation. For relatively short local flights, for example, Texada Island, I usually file a VFR flight plan, weather permitting, of course. If at some point during the flight I want to switch to IFR because of an unexpected haze or fog or whatever, what is the appropriate procedure? I obviously must stay VFR until I get an IFR clearance, so I would start orbiting in a safe location, but then do I ask terminal for an IFR clearance, such as requesting IFR clearance from present location to Boundary Bay, or do I need to call and file a flight plan with flight service? I'm not sure if this is a big enough question for your audio briefings or a single sentence answer. Any advice in any form would be much appreciated. Thanks, Valerie." So thank you, Valerie, for sending that message. And this could be really a whole episode on its own. Maybe it will be in the future, but here's the basics. And I think you nailed it. If you're on a VFR flight plan or on a VFR flight and you encounter IMC, number one is remain VFR. Okay, just because you're instrument rated, don't go trucking through the clouds there. Stay VFR, orbit in a safe location, get a hold of ATC. Okay, there's no need for you to call flight service and file a new IFR flight plan if you find yourself unexpectedly encountering IMC. And we know fog develops and it happens. Call ATC in the local area and just very simply, it's Alpha Bravo Charlie, request a IFR clearance to Boundary Bay. And they should be able to give you an IFR clearance right away. Here's the catch though. Let's say you were at 2,000 feet and the minimum safe IFR altitude in that area might be 4,000 feet or 5,000 feet. Depending on the controller, they're going to give you a clearance that says something like, you're cleared to the Boundary Bay Airport via the Nanaimo NDB, Victoria VOR direct, climb 5,000, and they might give you a new squawk code. Keep in mind that you are responsible for getting yourself to 5,000 safely. Okay, because you might be below their minimum IFR altitude. At 2,000 feet, where the minimum IFR altitude is 5,000 feet, there's 3,000 feet there where you're going to be below the minimum IFR altitude. Most controllers are going to say, my minimum IFR altitude for your position is 5,000 feet. So now as the pilot, you need to make an assessment. Can you get yourself to 5,000 feet safely without hitting terrain? If the answer is yes, then, you know, pick a heading, get up to that safe altitude, then proceed direct the first point, which in this case is, let's say, the Nanaimo DB. If the answer is no, like maybe you're in an unfamiliar area and you can't be 100% certain that you can get safely from your present altitude to the cleared altitude, then my best advice to you is to one, tell ATC, and then turn around and go back to where there's clear air behind you where you came from and go land somewhere else. Because ATC cannot vector you below the minimum IFR altitude, or the minimum vectoring altitude, I should say. So hopefully that answers the question. The other branch to that is in the States, in the United States, pop-up IFR clearances are much more common. They are used heavily. In Canada, we kind of sit, you know, we can give them, but more of the mindset, if you're planning to go IFR, then plan to go IFR. Every IFR controller can give a pop-up IFR clearance. That said, I wouldn't use the pop-up IFR clearance as your primary plan. Like, you know, I'm flying to such and such airport. My plan's to depart VFR, and at some point along the way, I'm just going to pick up a pop-up IFR clearance. That really isn't ideal. We don't really consider that great airmanship. So if you are planning to pick up a IFR clearance further down the line, file a composite VFR than IFR flight plan, or there's some other tricks of the trade that we could get into at some later point. But Val, thanks for your great email. Thank you for all the emails you always send me and your attitude towards flight safety. Thank you to everybody that has listened to, be it one, be it 15 or 50 of the last 50 episodes. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think it mattered. And if any of you want to get on with me and share an experience that you've had that you think others might be able to learn from, and if you're going to do it, please be ready to go into details to really describe the situation for the greatest, not entertainment, but for the greatest impact and the greatest learning value. Do email me, info@cardinalaviation.ca. If you want to check out some of the services that Cardinal Aviation provides, and we've got some big news coming up and we're working on some really exciting things, check out our website, www.cardinalaviation.ca, on Instagram, @cardinalaviation. And if you want to support what we're doing, you can go to the Cardinal Aviation website, to the podcast page. You can hit that support the podcast button. There's a few options there for you. And yeah. All right, everyone. Again, thank you so much for the last 50. Looking forward to the next 100, however many it's going to be. I don't know. Until next time, fly safely, never stop learning, and take care of yourself. Thanks, guys.